A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch.
The lights probably gone.
So had the stairs.
You are just number six.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 473. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are continuing our discussion about Simon and the Witch. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
This was a BBC children's comedy show from 1987 and 1988. It ran for two series for a total of 25. 15-minute episodes. They were short episodes. And it deals with the adventures and misadventures of a schoolboy called Simon, and sometimes some of his friends and classmates, and of course, an eccentric older woman who just happens to be a witch.
And we're in for some comedic adventures with a children's show.
Absolutely.
Now, last time we talked a little bit about the first season. Let's get on to the second season, because after the success of the first 13 episodes in 87, they returned a year later, but this time they widened out the world of the show, as it were, with the children on school holiday. And we find the children getting involved in a local cafe, ice cream restaurant and spaghetti house run by a Mr. Valdini, who is suffering the effects of some rather strange urban planning decisions that meant that his customers dried up, and the kids get involved in a campaign to try and save the cafe. Plus, we get some new cast members, we get some new kids in the area, we get some returning characters like the witch's sister, who's known as the Witch Doctor. She comes back for an episode, of course, bringing with her some more wild animals to sow chaos and cause yet more trouble for Simon and the Witch.
Indeed. And Lady Fox Custard is still there, living at Haughty Hall and continuing to lord it over everyone. And we have the witch enchanting a vacuum cleaner, which runs all over the place, and all sorts of chaos continues as it did in the first series.
It does, except, as we say, in this little wider world outside of the school. And we've got even a surprise visit to BBC Television Centre. The exterior is quite famous to us now. And the witch actually running across camera, interrupting the weather forecast from the famous actual British TV weather forecaster Michael Fish. Odd to see them at BBC Television Centre and that strange cameo, Brian.
Yes, those cameos in these odd places can be quite silly and quite fun.
I'll just add that because we're now outside of the school, we don't get the same school-based characters as we had in season one. Notably, Naomi Harris as Joyce has not returned for season two. She went on to other things in her acting career, as we know.
And the teacher and headmaster are no longer there because we're not in school for the second season. But they do continue with a number of the characters, and it doesn't feel like the ones that are gone are missing. It feels like they just don't belong there anymore because we're not in session at school.
Yeah.
So Simon and the Witch is definitely a children's show. It's definitely aimed at younger viewers, and it leans into some comedic value of a sort of stereotypical 1980s British school setting with silly teachers and annoying classmates and visits from stuffy dignitaries and so on.
Yeah, very much the sort of school life and existence that the listeners, or the rather the viewers, would have been familiar with, and probably emphasizes the bits that the viewers found annoying themselves.
Yes, and throws in this witch character who's a sort of curmudgeonly old woman stereotype with some spells and witchcraft thrown in.
And that's interesting because I sort of thought they were going to do more with this idea, Brian, because certainly Simon's mom and some other of the adult characters seem to take issue with the fact that Simon and his friends refer to this older woman as a witch. And there's a little bit of pushback about this unfortunate term being used, you know, to describe slightly eccentric older women. Of course, here she is an actual witch who does perform magic and spells.
Yeah, they do a little bit with that, but that's not one of the things they sort of lean into. There are some stereotypes in this that are a bit uncomfortable now. Considering it's comedy from the 80s, I find it's not too bad, but there are definitely a couple of them. The notable one being C.J. Allen with his silly mustache as Mr. Valdini and doing this awful comedy Italian accent. That was a bit cringeworthy.
It was. It reminds me of Andrew Sachs playing Manuel in John Cleese's Fawlty Towers.
Oh, I can see that.
Yeah. And it's unfortunate that when British actors used to do these sort of comedy characters from another country, they're always played for slightly sort of laughs as a sort of more stupid character than the regular cast, unfortunately.
Yeah, the European characters tend to be sort of not too bright, and that was the case in this.
It is unfortunate. Now, I'm going to say that this reminded me of another show that we've covered, Lizzie Drippin, which we did back in episodes 367 and 368. Again, a sort of similar origin story for that show, because it started as a series of popular books, then it gets an episode of Jack and Ori, although in that case I think it was actually a Jack and Ori dramatization, and then it breaks out into its own series. So that's got some similarities with how this story comes about.
Yeah, that was different because it was really not a comedy. It had a more of a slice of life kind of feel to it. And you had Lizzie's inner monologue as a big part of it, and suggestions that maybe the witch is all in her imagination, and so on. So it's quite different, but it does have some similarities there. It still isn't a great favorite of mine, but yeah, that is an interesting note.
And I seem to remember Lizzie Drippin being a much more solitary character than these school children who have their little gang.
Yeah.
And also, if I remember rightly, there were some suggestions towards the end of that that the witch was some sort of, I don't know, persistent time-traveling presence or existed in different times. But anyway, there were some interesting elements back in Lizzie Drippin.
Yes, quite a different show, but some interesting things in common. So let's get into some of our own thoughts, more than we already have, about Simon and the Witch. So, Eamon, what did you like about Simon and the Witch?
Well, I think we have to say, we have to compliment the cast on going for it. I think most of the cast are doing pretty well, including the child actors. Some of the adults are extremely good value for comedy purposes. So I think the cast, not too bad at all, Brian. What did you make of the acting in this?
Yes, I would agree that the cast is solid. I don't think we see anyone really letting it down, and the supporting characters, some of them are particularly good. I will say, with Lady Fox Custard and Hopkins, Joan Sims and Joe Grossi, you had some lovely comedy stuff going on there that was sort of the highlight of this, with the upper class lady doing her own thing and the butler being very particular and having that more folksy working class comedy side that he hides from Lady Fox Custard. That was sort of a fun thing in here, so that was sort of one of the highlights for me.
Yes, I know you enjoyed those two performances here, because where they're around, you do get some genuine comedy and humour. I'd say it looks pretty good. I think this is a fairly limited budget, but they make the most of the school setting in the first series and then widen it out into the cafe for the second series. There's also the theme tune, which Well, let's say that the theme tune goes with a rather fun title sequence of Simon and the Witch holding up various cards with the title and the name of the episode on it and who wrote the stories and so on, and then throwing them around and running around a bit. Not a huge amount of money spent on the title sequence and music, but actually fairly effective, Brian.
Yes, I found the opening and closing title sequences quite fun. It has lots of energy to it and has, you know, the two of them running away from us at the end. And that was fun. You know, with 15-minute episodes, you end up seeing those quite frequently. And I did not mind that with these. So I thought that was actually pretty good, too. And they had a lot of location filming in this, and I think that was nicely used. And the set, you know, the sets blending into locations, I thought those things were all handled pretty nicely.
Of course, they're 15 minutes long, so it's not a huge commitment in terms of episodes, this show. You can knock off a few of them quite quickly, Brian.
Yes.
And of course, it's aimed at this sort of 10-year-old and perhaps slightly younger audience. We're slightly out of our depth here, Brian, because, you know, we are not the target audience for this at all. But obviously, kids of that age would find, particularly, I think, the jokes about their school experience, they might find them more of a hit, more resonance for them than they do for us.
Yeah, I think it did sort of children's comedy of the time. It did that reasonably well. You know, they knew their genre and they knew how to do it. I think that was something that basically worked in this.
What about if we turn to the stuff that didn't work as well for us in this show, Brian? What were your bad points column?
Yeah, so the witch herself is not as interesting as she should be. She is very repetitive with complaining about things and with the magic things being sort of the same things over and over. It should be something that is really engaging. She should be a highlight in this that she isn't really.
Yes, she doesn't seem to progress over the two series. She just stays the same the whole time, even while the kids are getting better at stuff and growing up a bit. The witch is just the same. And of course, as we've mentioned already, they sort of miss any opportunity in this series to discuss a little bit about how society refers to older women who have slightly non-conventional lifestyles. I mean, it's perhaps not the show for that, but it was noticeable to us that they a couple of times people tell the kids not to call her a witch, but they don't go any further than that, really.
Yeah, it was interesting that they pointed that out but didn't really follow it up. You also, there's so much more to say about her being a witch and about magic and so on. It seemed strange to me that clearly magic exists in this world and the witch is transforming things and what have you, and no one seems to say much about that. It doesn't seem to have much impact on the world. There was a costume party thing in the first season where Lady Foxcustard's nephew is, of course, dressed up as Little Lord Fauntleroy, and he doesn't want that. The witch transforms his costume into like a street urchin kind of costume, and Lady Foxcustard complains about that the rental place wanted the costume back and it was different now. No one seems to make much note of the fact that, you know, magic is happening, and, you know, this should be something notable that people are questioning and are saying something about, and it just sort of happens there, which seemed a little odd.
I suppose we shouldn't be too surprised that a children's show mainly focuses on the kids and ignores the adults apart from their comedy value. You're right, Brian. The kids clearly know that magic exists, and none of the adults seem to realize that the witch is doing actual magic.
And the adults seem to ignore obvious changes and obvious things due to the magic. And the kids certainly, and the adults, should be questioning what's going on, unless magic is actually normal in that world and everyone knows about it. But they don't seem to be behaving as if that's the case either. there. So it's kind of odd that it's there and clearly real in this world, but doesn't seem to matter much.
I'll also say that it's all rather middle class. You know, there isn't really much made apart from obviously Cuthbert having to sort of be sent to this ordinary middle class school, but there's not much made about class differences. There's Simon's mom, who appears to be a single parent. Certainly there's no sign of Simon's dad, but again, we don't really get much focus on her and her struggles. It's just about the kids and the witch, really.
Yeah, I kind of like a lot of the cast of the adults in this, but yeah, they're just sort of there in the background, which is fair. You know, it's focusing on the kids, but it might have been nice to see a bit more development and a bit more going on, even within the comedy, considering it was, you know, a couple of seasons worth.
Yeah. Of course, there's some stereotyping in this show that we've sort of hinted at already that we found uncomfortable. There's the stereotype of the older woman being called a witch. There's the very unfortunate Mr. Valdini, the Italian cafe owner who's just played for comedy, stupidity, laughs, it seems, a figure of fun.
Yeah.
And there were some other stereotype problems that you noticed, particularly, Brian.
Well, there was some gender stereotyping with the children, where all of the boys seemed to be basically good and basically nice people, but the girls, most of them, the ones we see more of, tend to be mean and cause problems for people, and they tend to be set up for us not to like.
Yeah.
Certainly with Sally, and then in the second season, Angelica, those are the two girls, you know, who we see the most of. And yeah, they're not portrayed that well. They do add some more variation in for Angelica, but it's not ideal, I would say.
We sometimes get comments about looking back on older shows with modern eyes, but we do have to say that some of the sort of 1980s approaches to racial and gender stereotypes is a little bit awkward to watch now. And of course, there's also, I'm going to say again, Brian, it's a show aimed at 10-year-olds and youngers. It's not aimed at us. But is it funny, apart from Joan Sims and Joe Grossi in Horty Hall?
That's a good question. I would say, apart from those segments, it's not consistently funny. I think there are parts that are okay and parts that are maybe too repetitive and too obvious. But yeah, you know, I don't find it has sort of huge problems with that, but I don't think it's particularly strong on the comedy front outside of that one grouping.
Yeah, it's a shame. The gags don't seem very good to me now. And as you say, the witch character never progresses beyond the sort of simple, annoying, getting cross with things and not being able to do stuff.
When it comes to being dated, it's true that a lot of the stereotyping is very much of its time, but I think it is something that needs to be pointed out and that we should talk about, and, you know, gives some important perspective there. And there are also some things in here that I think are not related to how old it is. I think the sort of bland nature of the witch is not because of the time, it's just because it wasn't done particularly well.
Yeah.
And maybe similar with the handling of magic.
Okay, I guess it's time for us to move to our recommendations for this show, I think, Brian. Are you ready, and do you want to start us off?
I can start us off. I will say I am not going to recommend this. It is sort of generic 1980s children's comedy, and unless you are an aficionado of children's comedy from that time, I don't think there's any big reason to watch this. So no, I am not going to recommend it.
And I'm afraid neither can eye, and I feel slightly bad about this because I put this one on the list as it popped up on my Amazon recommendations. It's not great. I don't think you should be showing this to your kids now, particularly just because it's not very good, I think, unfortunately. I think Lizzie Drippin might be one to go back and look at in comparison to this. But yeah, it's a sort of double thumbs down from us here on British Invaders this time, I'm afraid. However, if you remember this show, or if you've seen it more recently, do get in touch and let us know what you think.
Please do. So, in summary, Simon and the Witch introduces us to this young schoolboy, Simon, and his friends and his mother, and of course, this witch, who is an actual witch who does magic and can transform things and make things disappear and so on. But she is not very good at reading and reading her spell book in particular, and so she becomes a pupil in Simon's class, and we have a first season where we spend a lot of our time at the school with all sorts of weird and madcap misadventures with the witch and Simon and the other students. And then in series two, we are on summer holidays and out in the town where they are and following more madcap adventures and misadventures with the witch and with Simon.
Phew, we've done it. So next time we find ourselves on slightly safer ground, I think. We are sticking with the BBC and looking at their supernatural show, The Living and the Dead, which came out in 2016. And actually, I think we've got some stuff to talk about next time, Brian.
Yes, that should be an interesting one, for sure. Until then, you can find all of our episodes at BritishInvaders.com. Also, please search for British Invaders on Facebook. We have our group there, so please join us there. And you can follow us on Threads and on Instagram. We are at British_Invaders_podcast.
Yes, come and find us on the socials and let us know what you think of Simon and the Witch. And also come and find us as part of the Voice of Geeks network, which you'll find at vognetwork.com. The Voice of Geeks for gaming, for podcasts, for Twitch streaming, much more at vognetwork.com.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening. And this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. Until next time, it's Eamon in England saying, I hope you've got your spelling right.